You know, I have been in ministry a long time, but, you know, going back before I was in ministry, I remember growing up, and did anybody ever watch professional wrestling growing up? You can be honest. Just raise your hand real quick. I'm just curious. Yeah, I didn't, actually, and I know that sounds weird. I knew of it, but I never actually seen it on TV. I don't know how I missed it. I just did. And I knew people who were into it, and I remember even in my mind thinking, is that real? But I didn't know. And I knew what real wrestling was, and Aaron was talking about ministry opportunities. At one point, I even helped coach a team, and I didn't personally wrestle, but one of my roommates did in college, and so I was aware of wrestling, but the professional part I'd missed, which is weird, too, because I grew up in San Diego, and, you know, in by Mexico, they got the luchadors, and so I'd seen the mask. I just didn't know what it was for sure. I know that sounds weird, and you're wondering, where's he going with this? We're not going to wrestle up here, and nobody's wearing tights or anything, as far as I know, but I do remember this, and some of you may be too young to remember this, but I remember watching Rocky III. Does anybody remember that? That was, and I know this is maybe sounds silly, this was the first time I'd ever seen Hulk Hogan. I know that's hard to believe, it just is, okay, that's just the truth. So I remember when Rocky walks out on the stage, do you remember this? And he walks out, and he's looking right into Hulk Hogan's chest. And I remember thinking, is that real? Is he standing on something? Because that is a huge man. And you know the story. Some of you know the story of Rocky. He's always fighting giants, so to speak. Always out of his weight class, always out of his league, fighting professionals when he's an amateur. I mean, that's kind of the story of Rocky, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, however many there are. But this one, I still remember. I remember him sitting there, and I know it was a movie, but I'm thinking, oh, he's dead. And you saw him get beat up before, so it wasn't like I figured it was going to be bad. And if you remember the story, you know, he fights and gets thrown out, and then eventually he picks this guy up and throws him out. And what I want to talk about today is your giants. You know, the word of the Lord this morning, I mean, I just stood there and thought, wow, God, I feel like you're doing something in this service far beyond whatever vote and all that. I want us to deal with some giants, some obstacles, some barriers that we run into that are far beyond what you could battle in the physical or battle by yourself, because we all encounter these things. And sometimes they're of our own making, sometimes they're not. Sometimes there's situations in our life that we run into and we just don't know how to handle. Sometimes it's sin. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's outside. Sometimes you don't even recognize them for what they are because it's almost like you don't even have a framework to understand what they are. Sometimes it's a giant and it's something before you and you look at it and you've already imposed limitations on yourself that no one else puts on you. You put them on yourself. And that comes from a lot of reasons, maybe insecurities you grew up with, or somebody told you you couldn't, or sometimes you just never saw it as possible before. This is kind of a silly example, but when I was in college, I'd gone to a secular university first, and then I transferred to Bible college. I have no idea what that was. Is that the bell for Rocky? I don't know, but when I was at Cal Poly Pomona, I got the opportunity to become an RA, it was a resident advisor in the dorms. It's almost like being a dorm mother to your floor. That was the most incredible ministry preparation I think I had up till that point. Because you learn counseling, you learn all these, problem solving and mediation, and I mean, all these ways to get people to do things they don't want to do, and you know, on and on. I mean, it was really, really good training. So then I did the same thing in Bible college. And I felt like for my senior year, I just kind of looked and I wanted to make the year significant. I wanted to have an impact. I wanted to do something more ministry related. And so I could not think of anything better than being an RA again for a second year. So I went to the dean of men and I met with him and I said, that's what I'd like to do. And they didn't usually do that because they wanted to give more young people opportunity to be trained that way. And he said, well, we could do that. He goes, and I would approve that. And then he said, have you ever thought about being ASB president? And I laughed. I sat there and laughed. I laughed because the current ASB president was a double major, business and psychology, straight A student. He was like 6'5", and was a starter on the basketball team all 4 years. That wasn't me. I mean, I looked at what he did, and he was the picture of what you would think of as the effective class president or the ASB president guy. And I thought, well, that's not me at all. I mean, what he does, I could never do. And Guy Drummond, he was the Dean of Man. I'll never forget. It's one of those moments in life where I can see the setting. I can't smell anything, but I can just see what was happening. I could see his bookcase. I could see the desk. Because it changed my life. Because he said, well, who says you have to do it the way he did it? Why couldn't God do something with you that was more like what you did? I remember sitting there and thought, whoa, I never thought of that before. I walked out of that room, and my head was spinning the whole way to class. And I had to walk from all the way across campus. And I remember walking across campus, and I remember the exact spot as I was praying to God, God, would you want me to do that? Why would anybody vote for me? I mean, I had just transferred there a year and a half ago, or maybe just a year. Well, anyway, I mean, how's that going to work? And I remember him saying, yeah, I want you to do that. I never thought of it. There's giants in your life that are there, and you don't see how to overcome them just because you haven't even thought of it before. You haven't even thought of the possible ways that it could be taken down. Self-doubt, fear of failure. How many of us have not fought one of these giants because you don't even want to get in the fight? You don't even want to get in the ring because the giant looks like that, and you know you don't have a chance from the beginning. How many times has somebody said, can't be done? What they should be saying is, well, hasn't been done yet. Because we serve a God who is a giant killer. And the way he does it is he works in you and through you, and he makes changes that you could never make. Yeah, you couldn't do it. But it's not about just you and what you can do. It's about what he does with you and through you and in you. That's how he works. Sometimes it's about our perspective that we just can't see how it could be possible. When I was still in college, we did a missions trip to New York City. How many of you have heard of Bill Wilson? He has this huge sidewalk Sunday school in Brooklyn, and that was a real culture shock for me. Even though I grew up in San Diego and grew up around a lot of different cultures, I'd never been to like a real inner city like that. And as we worked with people day in, day out, and saw the incredible, you know, poverty and the rough living situations, and I remember having a discussion with a young lady, and I was talking to her, and she was telling me about how she couldn't get a job because there were no jobs. And I questioned her on that. What do you mean no jobs? She goes, well, look around. Do you see a McDonald's? Like, no, I don't see nothing. All I see is burned out buildings. And I mean, it was rough. She goes, yeah, where am I going to get a job? There are no jobs. You got millions of people and nowhere for them to work. What am I supposed to do? So me, you know, in my naivete, I just say, well, why don't you move? Plenty of jobs where I live. She goes, well, where's that? How would I even do that? Where she was in her world, she was so kind of myopic and nearsighted. She couldn't even see past her neighborhood. The giant for her was something that she could change, but she didn't see how to change it. The change was so far beyond what she thought was even possible. It didn't even make sense to her. She couldn't even see it. I know some people who their giant is something somebody said about them and they just can't shake it. I know a guy, he is a huge, big old tattooed, tough looking guy. And everybody who sees him, you think, wow, this guy is something else. I mean, he looks like a mountain of a man. I remember one time talking to him about this job he was applying for, and he goes, and then I found out he didn't even show up. I'm like, why didn't you go? He goes, I couldn't have got it. What are you talking about? I mean, I worked with him as he filled out the application, and I didn't take him down to drop it off, but I knew he had, and I said, why not? So as we talked, he started telling me, he goes, yeah, I'm never going to, I mess up everything. Then he started telling me a story. When he first started in Little League, he struck out at bat. This is hard to believe. This is a true story. I wouldn't tell you if it wasn't true. I don't tell stories just for the heck of it. But he said his dad brought him home, dressed him in his sister's dress, and made him stand on the porch for 3 hours because he struck out. And he said, maybe next time you won't bat like a little girl. I cried. I couldn't believe anybody would shame their kid like that. But then it broke my heart that here's this mountain of a man, but in his mind, he's a little boy dressed as a little girl. You know what's worse about that? His dad was gone. It's not like he could repair that and go, Dad, can you tell me how much you approve me? Can you tell me I'm a man yet? Couldn't do it. And as much as I tried, you know, it's so hard to work through that. I mean, that giant was in his head and he couldn't even get it out. Sometimes there's a voice in your head that speaks so loud you can't even hear what's going on moment to moment. You just can't get past it. That voice in your head that tells you you're not good enough or tells you hasn't been done before, or tells you that you're going to be just like your dad or whatever. It's almost as if you have this crowd of people in a stadium that surrounds you, and you're walking through, and as you're living your life, you keep looking and listening and hoping they'll approve. Hoping beyond hope that someone will notice. Yeah, I made it. I did this. I achieved. A lot of times, those people aren't even around. They don't even know they're in the stands for you, but they're there. And it's a giant that keeps you oppressed and keeps you down. Sometimes those giants are past, like what you grew out of, what you came from. Maybe your family, maybe no one in your family's ever been to college. So for you, it doesn't even seem like a possibility. Or maybe you grew up in a world where there wasn't a dad, or maybe not an involved dad. And so you think it's not possible because it wasn't possible of what you saw. Maybe it's just you. Maybe your personality. Maybe you've been told that this personality you have cannot achieve. I know that sounds weird, but it happens. A lot of times people put us in boxes. I've been told that before. You're too loud. You talk to too many people. Actually, my kids say that all the time. We go places and they'll say, "Dad, could we not talk to anybody today? Could we just go in and out and not talk to a stranger? And that'd be great." Maybe you've been told you're too old or too young, or maybe you've just felt that way. Maybe you look in the mirror. I've talked to people even in this congregation. You know, I've said something about a picture of theirs, and they'll say, "Yeah, but I'm not that person anymore. Look at me." I'm looking at them like, all I see is wisdom and ability, and I see someone I want to be like when I'm your age. But for them, they see it as a giant, a limitation, something that keeps them from being who they could be. For some people, it's gender. For some people, that giant might be a diagnosis, something that hangs over your head. I know people who might even get a diagnosis and then not even check back with the doctor because they're afraid of what they might hear, and yet that fear hangs there and keeps them from doing things. Might be your race, might be money. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, "Oh, it takes money to make money," and so they think they're never going to make money. Could be sin. I didn't want to start off with sin because I think a lot of times we think of the giants of sin in our lives, and those are real. But a lot of times we don't know how to kill them. Might be pornography, it might be an addiction that holds you, and you can't help but think about it all the time. Might be a legal matter in your past. You know, we do background checks on volunteers. I remember one time got the background check back for a volunteer, and it showed like a felony B&E, breaking and entering. And this person had done like hard time for 5 years in the state penitentiary. And I'm looking at him like, "Your wife's an MD, right? She's a doctor." And he's like, "Yeah." But it didn't limit him because that was in his past. Wasn't who he was. See what I'm saying? Could have been a giant, though, that kept him from ministry, but it didn't. Could be fear, could be anger, past wrongs that you know about and nobody else does, and you're desperately afraid they'll find out. And if they do, then that'll change the way they think about you. Could be a divorce, and financially you're just crushed, and it's a giant that you don't see how you're going to make a way out of. Or that the kids, and you're struggling with trading them back and forth and visitation, and it keeps you from doing what you need to do. Or maybe because of that, you feel like your reputation is so damaged, or even the church has put a stigma on you. And because of that, you're not equal with other people, or it's the unforgivable sin, and you'll never be able to serve again. It could be a giant in your life that limits and keeps you from doing what God has for you. So I'm just wondering, what is it that keeps you from achieving and being what God has called you to be? One of the things about driving in a van, I shouldn't give this away, but I'm going to. You hear everything. You hear everything people are saying because they're behind you and their voices are projecting forward. And there's a lot of times where I'd drive kids in the van, and I remember distinctly one time I heard these boys, they were boys talking about, "I'm never going to have kids." The other guy's like, "You may never." "Why not?" "Oh, because my dad, you know, he left and he did this," and the other boy's saying the same thing, and they're like, "I'm just never going to do it. I don't want to do that to anybody." I pulled the van over. They're like, "What's going on?" Turn the lights on. I said, "Who says that you have to be what your dad was? Why can't you break that cycle? That doesn't have to be a giant in your life because it was for them. You could be the first. God does that. He redeems those sins of the past, those things that hold us back and keep us from being everything that he wants us to be. You can be a good student. You can have a good job. You can be a witness for Christ. You can be in the ministry. There's not an age limit for that. I know people who become missionaries when they're in their senior years of life. Go overseas. I know that sounds crazy, but people do it, and they can. And if God is calling you to do that, then you should do that. So what do we do with all this? Here's what we do. The first thing you need to know, and the foundation for everything, is God is for you. I want you to say that with me, because sometimes you almost have to hear it out of your own mouth to believe it. So I want you to say, God is for me. Let's say it. Wait, I like how eager you are. Let's say it together, though. Ready? God is for me. Now I want you to say it, and you don't even have to say it loud, but just say it convincing. You're convincing you. Let's say it. God is for me. For me. It's easy for me to know he's for you, but one of my personal struggles sometimes is that he's for me. I can believe God for your healing, but sometimes for me it's difficult. I can believe God for a lot of things for other people because I've seen it, I know it, and it's not that he hasn't done things for me, it's just sometimes I struggle with that. But he is for you. I want to read a couple scriptures with you that are powerful scriptures, just reminders. Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Hope and a future. One of my favorite scriptures in the whole Bible is this comparison. The thief, the giant, he comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. The giants in your life, they're not from God. God is the one who wants to take you and help you to fight them and to achieve and to overcome. The enemy is the one that crushes and takes your dreams. On the other hand, God wants to change all of that. So how do you kill giants? One of my favorite stories in the scriptures is, you know, when the children of Israel were going to spy out the land, you know, they'd escape from Egypt, they'd get over to the Jordan River, and they'd send 12 spies into the land. 10 of the spies come back with bad reports. There's giants. There's, you know, they look at us like ants. They're going to crush us. We can never beat them. There's so many of them, so few of us, all these bad reports. But two guys had great reports. And I know you know Joshua, who ended up leading the children of Israel later, but my favorite is Caleb. Caleb says, not only are there giants, but when we get there, I want them. I got them. I love that attitude. He's a giant killer. He says, yes, give me some of those giants. I got that. Even when he's, you know, they wandered around for 40 years, so he's around 80, still a giant killer. I love that. I love it, love it, love it. But for today, I want us to look specifically at 1 Samuel 17. And this is the story of David and Goliath. Here's how it goes. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped at the Valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall. Interesting thing in scripture, we still aren't sure who the Philistines were. Isn't that weird? All the history and archaeology, they don't know really who they were. We know they were there, and there's a lot of extra biblical archaeological evidence for them. They were a very accomplished warriors. They at one point had better metal weapons than the Israelites, and that was one of their advantages. We know that they tormented Israel for many, many, many years. Always, you know, back and forth right there. Some historians think they may have been Greeks that went over. Think Spartans, warlike people that were trained to fight all from their youth. This is who they were. Whether they were Greeks or not, we're not sure, but that's the people group that was there. And in this specific encounter, The Philistines come, the Jews come, and this one Goliath, this giant, comes out and he starts mocking the people of Israel. He starts mocking them. And they go into detail about how big his sword was and how big his spear was and his shield and how tall he was and how much his armor weighed. And you kind of get the picture that he's totally undefeatable. I mean, who could battle him? And then what he does is, I don't know how common this was, because I can't imagine anybody laying down their arms after this, but they kind of had this thing. What they would do is they would have one of our soldiers face one of your soldiers, and then whoever wins will serve you. I don't know. I wouldn't go with that. personally, but that's what they said. So Goliath goes out there and he taunts them. Now here's the thing that breaks my heart. 40 days he taunts them. And as he's taunting Israel, one of the Jewish historians, not in the Bible, but a Jewish historian going way, way, way back to that time period says, what one of the things he was taunting them with, do you remember that the Ark of the Covenant was actually stolen by the Philistines at one point? He taunts them that not only did he steal it personally, he says that he carried it and he killed the priests, Phinehas and Hophni. Do you remember them? That whole story with Samuel and Eli. Remember that? Okay, well, anyway, he taunts them that he was the one who stole it and he killed those priests. He's throwing it in their face. You know what he's saying? My God's tougher than your God. I'm a giant and I'm bigger than your God. That's what he's saying. That's what this whole story about is, whose God is in charge? Because back then, it was basically my God against your God. So what needed to happen was somebody needed to fight like a man. You know who it should have been? Should have been Saul. You know who Saul was? The king. Remember how one of the reasons he was chosen is he was head and shoulders taller than everybody else? That means as you're looking over the Israelite army, you see this crowd of people and you see this one guy standing up. That's the guy that should have fought the giant. But he wasn't fighting it because he really didn't have a heart after God. And sadly, we don't see anything in here about him being a spiritual leader. Nothing in Scripture tells us that he was. He was supposed to be the protector and provider for Israel, but he wasn't. He was a really, really poor leader in that way. In a way, they chose him for physical characteristics that didn't add up and didn't meet the need at the time. David comes in. Young David. He comes in, he sees the army depressed and demoralized, and he hears this mocking going on, and he's not going to stand for it. Here's what David says. He said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." You know what's different about that? Saul and the army were thinking about physical things. And as you know the story, Saul says, "Well, here, let me give you some armor." And he says, "Well, I can't fight in all this. It's not going to work." The thing is, Saul was relying on things that didn't fit. He was relying on physical things that weren't going to work. David, on the other hand, was saying, "Who is he to defy the living God?" Here's what I want you to hear today. The giants in your life, what they are doing is they are defying the living God. It's the same thing. Those giants that are in your life, whether they're your fault or not, whether they're from the outside or inside, those giants are defying the living God too. They're basically saying that they're bigger than your God and that you can't fight them. The problem is, a lot of times we're fighting them with outward tools, not inward tools. I read this portion of Scripture and I look and I say, where was the prayer? Why didn't Saul pull his army together and say, we need to seek God? We need to have God come and fight for us. Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he pull them together and say, we need to call out on God and we need to have him defeat this army? He didn't do that. But David did. And when did David do it? He did it all those years that he was alone. All those years that he was caring for his father's sheep. All those songs he wrote. All those times in prayer. That was all preparation for fighting this giant. You may be sitting here today and you aren't fighting a big giant. Yeah, you fought him in the past, but right now everything's good. Good. You need to prepare. Because here's something true about life. You may not be fighting a giant now, but it's not an if kind of question. It's a when kind of question. They always used to say that about, I don't know if you guys ride motorcycles, but that was always a thing. Have you put your bike down yet? Because it's not like it's not going to happen some point. It's going to happen. Life, it happens. And as life happens, better you be prepared and prepared in prayer way before it comes to you so that you're ready for the attack. Because when the attack comes, it's going to be big and you're not going to have time. If you know the story, David fights like a man. What he does is he gets out there and he picks up 5 stones. And as he picks up his 5 stones, you know, the armor all on Goliath, probably weighing him down. He probably sees this kid coming out. In fact, he says how insulted he is. And you send out a boy, and here I am, a man. I've been fighting since I was a boy. And And he thinks he's going to crush David. And David, you know, light on his feet and used to being out with the sheep. And he puts the stone in his sling and he whirls it around and hits him in the head, knocks him down. Then he goes and takes his own swords and cuts his head off and kills him. David relied on God, though, to beat that giant. He relied on God to do it. It wasn't about David and his prowess of fighting. I mean, he wasn't arm wrestling the guy. What he did was he depended on God all the way. What do you think that did for the army? You know the story, right? They all cheered and they said, the Bible says that they chased the Philistine army 25 miles. That's a long way. That's like a marathon. Now, I did what I was reading about it. It is mostly downhill, but still. And it says, it talks about how many people they killed and all that, and, you know, they defeated them completely. But think about this for a minute. Let's say you are fighting a giant. Do you realize how many people are watching you fight that giant? Did you ever think that maybe you should be a killer for the kids? I know it sounds weird, but maybe you should be a giant killer for your kids. Because they're going to learn to fight from you. The way you fight the giants, I'm not talking about your husband-wife thing going on, unless that's a giant. They're going to learn to fight the way you fight. When a problem comes up, what do? Throw your hands up and say, oh, I can't believe this. God is so mean to me. You throw your hands up and say, ah, it's just not fair. Life is not fair. I never can get ahead. Or do you say, we need to pray about this. We serve a God who's bigger than this giant and a God who's going to take this and make it right for his glory. What do you do? Is your first response to go to prayer or is your first response to complain? Because the way you fight, people are watching, but not just your kids. Everybody watches as Christians, don't they? Because you know when you make a little mistake and they say, hey, Christian boy, right? Your coworkers watch you. The way you battle, they watch. They know when you have a car accident in the parking lot or somebody dents your fender and you walk in the office. What do you say? What do you do? Someone cuts you off in the car in your carpool. What do you say? How do you respond? Everything. Everybody's watching you. Did you ever think that maybe fighting your giants wasn't just about you, but it's about everybody around you? Someone needs to know how to fight and to fight the right way. There are people who are considering Christianity who are watching your life. They want to see if it works. More importantly, they want to see how you deal with real life. Because everybody lives real life right next to you. I don't care what it is. If it's alcohol, if it's education, your economic situation, debt, whatever it is, people watch those things. Let me add another little wrinkle here. I've heard this asked so many times. Why five stones? You ever heard that? Some people say, well, I mean, he might have missed with one, right? And I think that's possible. Some people have also said, well, maybe there were other giants. Maybe in that culture, maybe the brother was going to step up next. And that wouldn't really go with the story, really, because it was supposed to be one champion fights and whoever loses, the other team goes. But interesting, if you've ever read the book of 2 Samuel, so we're skipping a whole book away, let me read to you some things that I don't know if you've read these before, but once again, there was a battle between the Philistines and Israel. David went down with his men to fight, so he'd been king a long time, and he became exhausted. And Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of Rapha, whose bronze spearhead weighed 300 shekels, who was armed with a new sword, said he would kill David. It's another giant. But Abishai, the son of somebody, came to David's rescue, and he struck the Philistine down and killed him. Verse 18, in the course of time, there was another battle with the Philistines. And at that time, Sibekai, the Hushite, killed Saph, one of the descendants of Rapha. It's another giant. Then in another battle, verse 19, with the Philistines at Gob, the Bethlehemite killed the brother of Goliath the Gittite, who had a spear with a shaft like a weaver's rod. Did you catch whose brother he was? Still in another battle, verse 20, which took place at Gath, which is one of the Philistine towns, there was a huge man with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. I know you guys are thinking Princess Bride, but he's actually another giant, another descendant from Rapha. And when he taunted Israel, David's brother's son, his nephew, killed him. I think it's interesting because there's more giants in the land. Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if you become a Christian and then all your problems go away? Wouldn't it be nice if you fight one giant and you're like, whew, ah, cool, I can rest now. You know what? Life's not like that. I heard somebody say it this way once. They said, new level, new devil. You get to a new level in Christ and then God illuminates the other things in your life that need to change. And you realize sometimes those are harder than the big things you thought were big, ended up being easier to fight than these other things. The truth is, there's always going to be another giant. The question is God going to be your giant killer or not? Are you going to let that giant control you and keep you in fear and keep you settled down? Here's my challenge to you today. Will you give him your giants or not? Here's the sad thing about life. God is more than willing to step in and help. But a lot of times we don't give it to him to do. We know the battle's his, but we still hold on. Will you give it to him today? Are you going to live like the giant killer that the people around you need to see? So how do you fight? How do you fight it? The first thing you need to do is admit what it is. Clearly and accurately defining a problem is usually half the solution. You got to admit you got it. Sometimes you can't even see it yourself, but you need to admit it to God. You need to admit it to yourself. Sometimes you might even have to ask other people if they could see it. Like you might say, hey, does this giant on my back make me look fat? You may not want to hear the answer because he may be way bigger than you even thought. And you may need some real help in fighting that giant. For some of us, it has to do with just submitting to God. And you've battled it and battled it and battled it. And he's saying, daughter, just let me fight this for you. For some of us, it means restitution. And we need to own what we've done and change it and work it. Some of us need to put boundaries in our life that are going to be difficult because it means choosing, you know, what we're going to let our eyes see or who we're going to hang out with or who we're going to let influence us, where we're going to go, what we're going to do with our time. The biggest thing, though, is prayer. Prayer is the biggest weapon we have. Using the Word of God is the next one. Knowing your Word and using it. I'm talking about private prayer. I'm talking about prayer here. In fact, if we could have our altar team come, that would be awesome. And could you help with those baskets? There is strength in prayer with our friends here at this church, with your family. I don't know how many times I've called friends or in this days and age, usually text them, say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Can you help me pray? And I know people who will pray. I know people who will say they will pray and not pray, but I know people who will really pray. It can get really awkward sometimes because I have to humble myself to say I need help and I can't do it by myself. I know sometimes even coming down to an altar in front of people kind of makes it, you just put them on those steps, just right, like the second step is fine. Let me ask, how many of you, I'm not going to ask you to close your eyes, because just let me ask, how many of you have battled a giant? That's kind of an easy one, because if you're alive, you battled a giant. Let me ask you a more personal question, and you're among family. How many of you are battling one right now? All right. How many are battling more than one? Isn't that the worst? You got one, one is enough, but then there's more. Sometimes it feels like it just piles on. Here's what we're going to do today as a church. I want you all to stand with me. I'm going to ask you to make a couple commitments, and then I'm going to invite you down to pray. And what these ladies brought down, I appreciate it. Just some rocks, just some stones. David grabbed 5. You may need 5, I don't know. And it's just a symbol that kind of says, I'm going to have God help me fight this battle. I promise you that as David was picking those stones out of that dry creek bed, I guarantee you he was praying the whole time. I guarantee you that he was praying as he swung that sling around his head, no matter how many times he had done it. I'll bet you he just sat out there watching sheep and just was hitting like random rocks all day long. He knew he could hit that giant, but he didn't rely on that. He relied on God. So I'm going to invite you to come in a second and grab a rock and then just spread out here, and we're going to pray with you. And maybe you're not battling a giant right now. That's okay. You can still grab a rock if you want, but I do want you to help us pray and pray for some of these that are battling them right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pray. We're going to bow our heads, and then I'm going to invite you to come, and we're going to spend some time down at the altar. Father, there's a lot of hands out here. A lot of us are battling giants right now. Things that we've done, things that